Hey guys, welcome back to Develop Lex. This week we've got Mike Hines of Winterwood with us, and we're going to talk about affordable housing.
Affordable housing was an interesting thing that I didn't know a ton about before this interview. Affordable housing also is almost like a hit word in today's world of what actually is affordable. And I think that Mike did an amazing job breaking down what an affordable housing project is and all of the facets that go into that. So if you have any interest in affordability in general, Mike was able to touch on that, as well as the nitty gritty of capital stacks, of feasibility, of how affordable housing in the real world actually works. He did an amazing job.
Yeah, affordable housing is pretty misunderstood in what it looks like in real life. So I hope you stick with us through the end of this one, learn a little bit more about what it looks like for Lexington.
Welcome back to Develop Lex. We are sitting here at the Awesome Inc. studio and sitting today with Mike Hines. I'm going to let Mike introduce himself, but we just talked about the titles and the company names. Mike is the president, CEO, and principal broker of Winterwood. And the reason, and we'll again talk more about this, but a huge reason that we wanted to have Mike on in particular was affordable housing and the emphasis on affordable housing as we continue to go through this show. Lexington is in a spot where that becomes almost a hit word sometimes as it relates to infill redevelopment and other plethora of items. But Winterwood does a lot of different things within the affordable housing space. And Mike is a lot more educated than I am to be able to speak on those things. So they actually have some active projects in Lexington, as well as several other states and cities. But we are stoked to have Mike on. So Mike, if you could tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe let's go background first to figure out how you got to where you're sitting at today. And yeah, let's go from there.
All right, Weston, thanks very much for the opportunity to be here. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
I appreciate the kind introduction as well. My background in real estate and really affordable housing goes back to 2002. By education, I'm a certified public accountant, and I started in the accounting profession first and spent several years working in the accounting profession. You know, typical, I worked for a large company, so I was a corporate accountant. But that company was leaving the Louisville market, which is where I'm from, and consolidating operations in Chicago, and had made me an offer to move with them. I took an interview with a housing development company in Louisville, much smaller than the company I lead today, and was fortunate enough to get the job and was able to stay here and not have to go to Chicago to keep my employment with that company. Started out as a financial analyst using my accounting background. And I also have a master's degree in finance. So using my accounting background, starting from that perspective. And really, once I got into it, and I think most practitioners of affordable housing would probably say the same thing, that once it gets in your blood, you just kind of fall in love with it. And that was certainly true for me. That's 22 years ago now.
Yeah, 22 years ago.
Yeah.
And so can you talk a little bit about the trajectory? Obviously, you didn't wake up the year, I guess, 21 years ago and sit to where you're at now. How kind of has the trajectory of your career looked and to where you are?
I've been fortunate to have a lot of mentors along the way, a lot of people who gave me a hand up, who gave me a chance when I really might not have deserved one or warranted a chance. And I think that is half good fortune in my case and half hard work. And, you know, I'm willing to work as hard as anyone and put in the effort and put in the time. But without some really nice folks along the way and giants of our industry really giving me a hand up, I may not be here today. So I started as a financial analyst, worked my way into the vice president's role at that company. Spent several years as a vice president, actually at that point, was debating leaving the company, but then the president at the time chose to retire, and so I became president of that company and served as president of that company for 8 years. So I spent a total of about 15 years at that company, working my way up that company. And from there, and that was a great opportunity for me. It afforded me a lot of knowledge, a lot of experience. It gave me a lot of room to learn, a lot of room to make mistakes and learn from my mistakes. And I think that's important to anybody's professional development, is to learn from your mistakes.
Yeah.
Really gave me a good shot. And then 6 or 7 years ago, talked to the principal at Winterwood. No, I'm not the principal, but talked to the principal at Winterwood, and she offered me a job to come and take over the operations for Winterwood. And I had worked with Winterwood from my other perspective. I knew them, respected them, and joined the company, I guess, 6.5 years ago. And it's been a great experience.
DevelopLex is sponsored by SV and Stone Commercial Real Estate, a full-service commercial real estate firm located in Lexington, Kentucky, affiliated with the SVN International Network, which is comprised of over 1,600 advisors and staff and 200-plus offices across the globe. The SVN Stone team consists of experienced commercial real estate advisors in the heart of the Bluegrass. SVN provides commercial real estate services to large corporations, middle market businesses, and individual entrepreneurial investors. Serving the greater Lexington area, SVN offers advisory services for sales, leasing, management, and development of commercial properties locally, regionally, and nationally. With transaction volume of over $400 million, the advisors at SVN Stone Commercial Real Estate have vast experience and deep understanding of all aspects of commercial real estate.
So yeah, maybe let's talk about specifically Winterwood, and then we'll go into, maybe let's reverse that. Let's go affordable housing, because there's obviously a big emphasis on affordable housing for your company. And maybe if you could give just kind of a high level definition of affordable housing and what you all do, and then we can talk specifically Winterwood and what your day-to-day looks like.
Yeah, defining affordable housing is interesting. you ask different people, you're going to get different answers.
Isn't there a difference between like capital A versus not? Am I thinking of that? Did I just make that up? No.
I'm not familiar with that.
Looks like I made that up.
But that doesn't mean anything.
You might be able to see it on video. He looked at me as if I made that up, so I think I made it up.
Yeah, that may not mean anything. It may mean something very significant.
Yeah.
Fundamentally, housing affordability is a supply and demand issue. Fundamental real estate market stuff. Along the way, just in my personal background, along the way, I became a broker, a licensed real estate broker. It was very applicable to what I do. I went through the CCIM courses, was able to become a CCIM, Certified Commercial Investment Manager. And, there's a lot of data analysis, market analysis that comes along with that certification. But at its base, affordability or the lack thereof is a supply-demand imbalance. Now, different people will define affordable housing differently. There's natural occurring affordable housing, which in other circles might be called Class C apartments. It just depends on who's speaking and the definitions and the words that they use. There is incentivized affordable housing. You had a guest on, very knowledgeable guest. I've known her for a long time. She was one of the podcasts I burned getting ready for this interview.
Yeah.
She went into a great detail about some of the programs that specifically are designed to incentivize affordable housing, to actually bring equity into transactions, to reduce the amount of debt that has to be carried, and that allows the rents to be restricted more affordably. Those are powerful incentives. And they are still in effect today, and we use them regularly. But there are other programs that have been created throughout the years, either run through the federal government, state government, or local government. You know, Lexington itself actually is a leader in our state. It was the first municipality to create a housing trust fund that was funded with general fund dollars. I think Lexington beat Louisville, who was the second one, by at least 5 or 6 years. And recognizing that there needed to be a local incentive to try to help with the affordability issue. So that leadership at the local level here in Lexington probably has contributed in a great deal to the little bit that we've been able to do to address the housing affordability gap in Lexington. And the Housing Trust Fund is run by a very well-respected individual whom I've worked with for many years. So,
And then can you maybe give, I know there's a lot to it, but if somebody asked you truly what affordable housing is, what would you say?
Affordable housing is housing that is affordable to the person who lives there. I need affordable housing.
Yeah.
Weston, you need affordable housing. But we may have means that others don't, where affordability is not out of reach for us. Some people, it is very much out of reach, especially when they're trying to interact in the private market. And that's where these incentives and these programs to help write down the cost of construction, and in some cases to help pay the rents for the actual residents, the occupants, come into play.
Yeah.
To really try to help bridge that gap for some for folks.
Gotcha. And this is kind of a multifaceted question, but we'll get back to maybe affordable housing and more definitions and things that the general public needs to know. But I am curious how Winterwood fits into that equation. I know before we actually turned the mics on, I was asking how to introduce you, and Winterwood is kind of the overall. But what are the different components to your business at Winterwood? And then we can kind of touch on a few different of those distinctions.
Winterwood itself was founded in 1979 and has always been headquartered in Lexington. We're still headquartered here today on Newtown Pike. Our primary focus from inception was to operate affordable housing. So we began as a management company. From that beginning, we have developed other entities. So today we have Winterwood. So Winterwood Inc. Winterwood is the parent company. The 45-year-old company will be celebrating our anniversary this year. We have Winterwood Development, who actually undertakes the development work and activity. Best example I can think of would be 330 Newtown Pike, which is a development we're just about wrapped up with the construction phase and then the leasing and occupancy phase. That is handled through Winterwood Development, which is an affiliated company. And then we also have a mechanical contractor and a general contractor to perform certain services within our portfolio and for others. Occasionally does a little bit of third-party work, but mostly just servicing our own properties. And so within all those family of companies, when I say Winterwood, I'm speaking about that umbrella family of companies, but there's actually three distinct operating entities there that provide those different tranches of service and provide different activities.
Gotcha. Can you give a little bit of the scale of the company, where you're based in Lexington, but mm-hmm. Where all do you all operate or develop?
So we currently have an 8-state footprint, and those are properties under ownership or management. Our biggest state by far is our home market. We manage about 15,000 units in total, residential units. We have a small commercial space operation, largely that is where there's commercial on the first floor and residential above, not very large at all. And of our 15,000 units that we manage, a little over 12,000 of those units are in Kentucky. Okay. We are in just about every market in Kentucky. I think I have surveyed our portfolio, and we're in about 80 Kentucky counties out of 120.
Wow.
So we serve all parts of the state, rural, urban, and everything in between, and currently have about 500 employees.
Wow.
Today. Yeah.
And are most of those employees, I guess the job titles vary, but are the people that are actually living in Lexington, operating out of your all's office in Lexington, or where is that?
So most of our employee base is at the site level. So when I say we have 500 employees, you can think of your maintenance technician or your property manager. That makes up the large bulk of our employee base. Our Lexington employee base, while we have those individuals here, we also have the corporate individuals. So that's all back office functionality. Mm-hmm. That's your accounting, your IT, your HR, human resources, you know, those types of things, compliance, monitoring, all of those jobs are here in Lexington and are headquartered in our, you know, here in Lexington on our office.
Okay.
So I wouldn't say that Lexington, I think Lexington probably is our largest employee footprint given the corporate office.
Yeah.
Technically, our largest management footprint is the Louisville MSA.
Craftsman Contractors is Central Kentucky's one-stop shop for roofing, windows, siding, and gutters. CraftsmanContractors.com/contact us will get you straight to the form you need so that their team will get in touch about your project. Or just text Stephen at 859-246-0108. When they finish your project, windows, siding, gutters, or roofing, you'll see what they mean when they say we build with integrity.
So you touched on Newtown, and that would be a part of the development portion of your business. So there's also, you also obviously are holding property. Do you purchase additional properties? And this is because I'm 100% ignorant to the fact. Can you purchase a property and then make it affordable or quote unquote affordable housing? I guess, yeah, talk if, on a few different levels about what you guys like do day to day, if you could.
Sure. So the development process, I'll touch a little bit on that, and then I'll touch a little bit on the acquisition disposition space. The development process, most development projects take a decent amount of time. So we, I'll pick on Newtown, you know, just for purposes of this, you know, this interview, but it took us, we began working on that project about 4 years ago, a little over 4 years ago, when we first got it under site control, got a purchase option, dealing with the then owner. From there, we began to develop our plan, financial feasibility, architectural feasibility, working with civil engineers, to see how much we could do with the zoning that was in place on that property, which is a real benefit that Lexington has, is that you do have dense zoning. So we were able to actually maximize that site pretty well. And today we're just about done with construction and mostly leased up. We have a little less than half to go on the lease up, which has gone extremely well. And then finishing out and leasing up the commercial space. And that's an example for your, you know, timeline from start to finish. And it'll still be another 6 to 8 months before we flip that into permanent operations. And that's, you know, for us as a developer, that's permanent loan conversion, beginning of amortization, you know, flip it into permanent operations, prove out stabilization. So that's, you know, 4 years plus minus on that project in total just to get it to operations. Then we will operate that property for at least 15 years. That's the investment horizon. So when we're raising capital on the front end, the investment horizon that we use is 15 years, and it's 15 years from stabilization. So after the 15 years is up, there will be a recap of that property. It will either be us as the general partner buying out our investment partners and continuing to operate the property, or there may be a disposition of the property to settle the affairs of all the partners that are in the transaction. Generally speaking, Winterwood chooses to buy out the LPs and keep the property long term. We have properties that we manage today that we've managed since 1979.
Wow.
And those are, you know, still with us, and still, you know, we pride ourselves on our asset management, our preventive maintenance activities, and we try to keep those properties in good shape, and they are still, for the most part, in very good shape.
And then as it relates to acquisition, that's another facet. Describe kind of what a deal looks like.
So on the acquisition, we do that work as well. We acquired 45 general partner interests 2 years ago. Not necessarily in Lexington, Lexington adjacent. We do, one of the properties we acquired was in Paris, and one was in Versailles, I believe. Lexington adjacent, but we acquired 45 general partner interests, and these properties were built in the 90s. And so the general partner of those properties was ready to exit, and we were able to come to terms. And so we acquired their interest in those properties. And now we're evaluating that portfolio for redevelopment opportunities. There are some capital needs in that portfolio that we do have to address. And a lot of the incentives that we use, the housing tax credit being the most prolific incentive right now, although not nearly enough, we can use for renovations or for new construction. So they're highly flexible programs. That program that I'm referencing was created in 1986, and it was built to be flexible. It was built to be a highly flexible source of capital. And really, it's not capital directly. It's the allocation of a federal tax benefit from which you can draw capital. So your capital partners are typically C corporations who have tax bills, tax, you know, tax obligations that they know they can take a tax credit, because those tax credits do deliver over a 10-year horizon. And those can be banks, those can be insurance companies, those can be syndications of companies, you know, many companies pulling together and doing an investment. They can also be not traditional companies that you would think of, distilleries, horse tracks, yeah, things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's further incentive for somebody to propel development or to invest in your company effectively in order to build or acquire affordable housing.
Correct. Correct. And in that execution where we purchased those 45 assets, we will hold and renovate those assets over the long term. That's our intention.
Gotcha.
Not really a disposition or, you know, acquire, flip, disposition type of approach for us.
Gotcha. That's awesome. I guess my follow-up question to that would be affordable housing, huge word at this point in time. I don't have to catch the audience up to know that that is, especially in Lexington, but I do know that in a lot of markets around the United States, affordability has just pretty much gone out the window. How logistically is a company like Winterwood bridging that gap and like solving that problem?
Well, if we had had this conversation 22 years ago, plus or minus, when I started in this business, that would not have been the statement, the premise. I am really glad, in one way of looking at it, that the affordability crisis that this country has had for a long time is finally starting to get the attention it deserves. That is, affordable housing is the basis for anybody to be successful at anything in life. If you don't have an affordable place to live, if you cannot have secure, stable housing, achieving anything else is next to impossible. So I'm glad that the issue is finally getting attention. What it needs now is political action. There is my company. There are other very good companies that do work similar to ours. We would do more if we could. The resources are insufficient. And that continues to be a challenge. And I hope that one day we'll address it as a whole, not only as a Lexington, as a community, and which I've mentioned has been very proactive, but as a state, as a country, finally take a look at our housing shortfall, our shortage. It is estimated that in Kentucky, I think for the entire state, we're short about 80,000 affordable units. And that's just what some people define as affordable, which is affordable to persons under 80% of area median income. We are short many more units than that as a state. And as a country, the estimate is in the millions. And we have just not built enough housing in this country in the last 20 years to keep pace with population growth, immigration, and demand. We just haven't.
I'm curious, just because it'll help my mind maybe get wrapped around it. You just touched on, I believe, a portion of the definition, but what does a housing unit have to, what is definitionally how you can are qualified as an affordable housing unit?
So, I may have mentioned this when we were live, may not have, but affordability, the lack thereof, fundamentally is a supply-demand imbalance. That's the fundamental facet in the market. But when most people use affordable housing, they're defining that based upon this metric called area median income. And so they're defining affordable housing as housing that is affordable to a family earning a percentage of the area median income. Generally speaking, that percentage starts at 80% of area median income. The housing tax credit incentive that I mentioned, it now, due to changes at the federal level a couple years ago, it now can serve up to 80% of area median income in some circumstances. But historically, it would serve 50 to 60% of area median income families. Now, what does that mean? You know, the area median income for a family of four in Lexington, and the median being 50% of the population is above and 50% of the population is below. So it's not an average, it's a median. The median income in Fayette County for a family of four, I believe, is right around $80,000. So when you're talking 60% of area median income, that's about $63,000 a year. Well, families that make $63,000 a year for a family of four are working families. Oftentimes you have two earners in that family, but the gap to them to find safe, affordable housing in the open market is pretty significant. Market surveys in Lexington for 2 and 3 bedroom units, the rents are effectively unattainable for a family at that income level. And it's not for, you know, it's not for a lack of effort by that family. So what our housing, with the housing we build, allows that family to do is to have a nice, secure unit that is affordable to them, that does not take an extraordinary proportion of their income to live there. And that is really the crux of what affordable housing is, I think, in most people's definitions.
Yeah. And logistically, and this might not be a solid percentage, but what is the average estimated percentage of what people's income should go towards housing? Is there a exact percentage? And then maybe what is average in Lexington?
So the guidance is, the federal standard is, that people should not pay more than 30% of their income for housing.
Gotcha.
So excuse me.
Just as rough math, so let's call it 60,000. You're at, what is that, 18? Go towards housing.
Yes. So if you have a family of four and you have a budget annually of 18,000, that equates to a monthly rent of about 1,300 without pulling my phone out and doing math. Go find a 3-bedroom apartment in Lexington for $1,300 a month.
Yeah.
And see what you can find.
Yeah.
I would challenge anybody to do that.
I remember in college I paid $312.50 for to essentially live in a shoebox.
Mm-hmm.
On campus that would not sustain a family of four.
No way.
So yeah.
And if you did find something, I would be concerned about the safety, the habitability of that housing.
Gotcha. And so, and this will kind of play into my next question, but, and so the goal in you touched on incentive that you're under resourced. But so the goal of building affordable housing and deeming something as affordable housing would be, is it purely government incentive to make up that gap between what somebody is actually logistically able to pay versus what the area median income is? That's where government would then either A, incentivize an affordable housing developer, or B, do they actually add money to the rent paid by the tenant? How does that logistically work?
It can be both. We have to recognize, so people focus on the government incentives for rental housing. Excuse me. So people focus on the government incentives for affordable rental housing. We have to recognize that the government, especially at the federal level, subsidizes housing for most people. In fact, 75% of the federal housing subsidy is realized by the mortgage interest deduction for homeownership that most taxpayers take advantage of. The remaining 25 to 30% is incentivized for rental housing. And those incentives come through two or three ways. They come through the affordable housing, the housing tax credit that I mentioned. They come through rental assistance subsidies directly to the families to help pay rent in those properties, and also can come through the form of subsidized loans. So low interest loans or more below market loans. But I think it is lost a lot in this conversation that as a country, we do incentivize housing. And we have made a choice, right or wrong, from a policy perspective to say, well, the housing we want to subsidize is owner-occupied single family with a mortgage. That's the housing we want to subsidize the most. And, you know, I'm not here to debate policy, but I do think it's important that people recognize that that's a decision, that's a policy decision that has been made.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so I guess there are a couple different means. So there's government incentive, and then what would be other means in which that gap is made up?
So we're constantly, you know, working to satisfy, you know, not only design demands, design criteria. We do want to create communities of choice. We do want to create desirable places to live. And then we have to satisfy local requirements, entitlement approvals, those types of things, design parameters relative to that. And then we're constantly sourcing capital for transactions. So this is not relevant. This project did not occur in Lexington. It occurred in Huntington. We just closed the financing and commenced construction on a development in Huntington, redevelopment of an old hotel, historic adaptive reuse. We had 12 capital sources, Weston, in that closing. And that included the tax incentive, which was the biggest by far. We also attracted incentives because of the historic nature of the building. There are tax incentives at both the federal and state level, true in Kentucky as well, to save historic structures. And so you're able to use those resources in combination with the housing tax credit. Those two can work together. And then we had several below market loans that came in through the state and the city. And then we had conventional financing. And that's just, you know, as any other developer would, going to the bank, proving out your NOI, saying, I want to borrow this much money. So all of those things together came together to create what will be affordable housing for seniors with a medical service facility on the first floor in Huntington, West Virginia. Yeah. And we worked on that project. To date, we're about 5.5 years in that project, and we have a 2-year construction timeline. So all said and done, it'll be eight, nine years before that project flips to stabilization.
Yeah, I guess that is a good lead into, are there maybe to give people a vision for the actual operations, do you have any other success stories similar to that that you would be proud to talk about?
Well, I am most proud, and this is one of the things that I really appreciated about Winterwood and the perspective of our principal. And while I've avoided naming names and just referencing agencies and things of that nature, I will say Carol Warsham, who is our principal, she has been a leader in the affordable housing space in our state since 1979, since she took ownership of Winterwood at that time. And she has, so in my background, I come from the development company I worked for in Louisville was a nonprofit organization. And I have an affinity for trying to help folks who, you know, disadvantage individuals. And so some of the things I'm most proud of, we did a project here, small project, 26 units with a nonprofit partner here in Lexington to help medically vulnerable adults. And these are individuals that have a very hard time finding housing, secure, stable housing. And not only were we able to build the 26 units, but we were able to build offices for the nonprofit on that same site so that those residents could have access and proximity to the services they needed. And you know, really talking to those residents and really interacting with those residents, you can hear how much that access to housing and that access to services is changing their day-to-day lives for stability, which helps them gain employment, keep employment, provides a lot of stability. In this case, because they are medically vulnerable, provides consistent medication, consistent medical care. It changes their lives. And that is really the piece that speaks to me a lot. You know, as an accountant, I always get bogged down with spreadsheets. And in fact, to me, it's not getting bogged down. It's a fun exercise. I can use this spreadsheet to solve this problem. I can figure out this capital stack. I know I can. But when you really get out and you interact with the people that are being helped, particularly in those types of developments, it's impactful. You know that your action has done more than just create a unit to rent to a family, and you're going to collect rent, and you're going to make a little margin on it, and that's great. Yes, we do that. I mean, yes, that's part of the business, but it doesn't change your life until you interact with somebody whose life has been changed by it, and then it will get you.
You're solving a problem.
You're changing an outcome for someone. You're changing the trajectory of their life. And that matters more than that's more than dollars and cents.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's take it back to Lexington if we can.
That project is here in Lexington, by the way.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. 26 units here in Lexington, nonprofit partner.
Yes. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So in relation to Lexington, we've mentioned the words infill redevelopment. Urban service boundary is obviously a thing. We're oftentimes the conversation goes back to land cost, affordability of land, how people can actually make financials work in trying to do new development is typically a hard conversation and something that the city is at this point struggling with. How does a company like Winterwood address that issue in a city like Lexington? Like how does Winterwood get deals done and like actually get projects going in a city like Lexington now?
So it's difficult. It's difficult to find a good site. It's difficult to keep it under site control long enough to get enough financing together to purchase it. That is extremely difficult. The price per acre here in Lexington is very high relative to the rest of the state. So because of the limitation in developable land, it has raised the land prices. And so when we are purchasing property here as opposed to property in other markets, it costs more. It just does. And that cost has to be built in. And now, fortunately, Lexington has created some programs to try to, particularly for groups like ours who are developing affordable housing, to try to help offset that cost. But it gets back to that market issue of supply demand. If there's nowhere to go to build additional housing, then all you're left with is infill construction. And to do infill at scale and to make it economically feasible, you have to go tall. And to go tall adds another layer of costs. So it is expensive to build here in Lexington. It is difficult to build here in Lexington. It's more challenging than any other market I have experience in from that perspective.
Yeah, makes complete sense. I mean, I think that's kind of the recurring theme with development in general. And then I would want to piggyback that on actually a question logistically with affordable housing. In theory, these people's that you would be serving through the venture are under the median income level. So access to services, I would think, is also limited. Mm-hmm. Walkability maybe, or public transportation could maybe be an issue, because theoretically with affordable housing, there's still places to build in Lexington, but you continue to go farther and farther out, and that may not help the residents that are actually occupying that affordable housing. Is that the case? Do you see more affordable housing closer to city centers where there's access to more services and amenities? Or is a strategy moving forward in Lexington, and say in a crazy world, we open it up and we can just keep going out, does that help an affordable housing developer, or does that hurt the residents that are actually occupying that affordable housing?
That's a thoughtful question. It really is. We have properties that are adjacent to Lexington, Winchester, Paris, Georgetown. You know, we have properties that we operate and manage that are affordable properties in those kind of outlying areas of Lexington. Most, if you want to live in Lexington, you work in Lexington, and you want to have proximity to the amenities and the services of Lexington, you know, you're really going to want to build in Lexington. I mean, that's really, you know, we should be, as a community, in my opinion, building housing for people who live and work in that community. I don't know that it is smart policy going forward to keep doing what we've been doing, which is assuming that everyone has a car and commutes are okay. Now, I personally commute. That's a choice that I make. But it's not a choice I would have to make. It's a choice that I choose to make. I don't think we, as from a policy perspective, should continue to think that, well, people can just live 30 minutes out and drive in. I think that that is an old way of thinking, and I think that deserves a policy review. I really do. We should be really trying to build housing where people want to be. And that's what creates vibrant communities. Yep. That's what creates, you know, when you go places, and Lexington's got a pretty vibrant culture and a pretty vibrant downtown. When you go there, the people who are there are people who live here. You know, they want it, that life. They want to live here. They work here. We should be able to afford as much of those opportunities to people who want that as we can.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
And this is all a matter of my personal opinion.
Sure. Yeah. This is opinion of my kind. It's not necessarily speaking on behalf of Winterwood. And this is an opinion of Weston Lockhart. I would say to that, I think it becomes then difficult, and we go back to the same conversation that we continue to have, and that I think that people have to think through for themselves, of growth in some capacity. I think I can't remember what episode somebody said, if you're not growing, you're dying, which I can subscribe to that. And then growth in some capacity is imminent, because we do have a vibrant city that people want to be in. And so to follow that up, then you either have to go up or out. It's very clear that we don't really want to go out, and I don't necessarily have a problem with that. But then you have to look at yourself and say, are you allowing us to go up? Mm-hmm. Are the infill projects that are taking place in the city, you know, if a company like Winterwood, and this is not a case that has happened that I know of, but if a company like Winterwood goes and puts a property in her contract and says they're going to build an 8-story building, are you showing up? Are you one of the hundreds that show up and say, no, we don't want this because we don't want to look at it? But all the while saying that you want affordable housing in the city, it's just a very difficult thing that we've had to navigate for a while. But I feel like it's really been an issue as of late. So that's just my opinion. And I feel like on the affordable housing episode, it has to be said that there are, you know, I think in theory, everybody loves affordable housing, but and the thought of inclusivity. But if you're not pro one of those two, then you're probably going the opposite way. I think that's a fair opinion.
Yeah, you know, it's with most challenges, you get three variables. And you have to be able to modulate at least two of the three to impact an outcome.
Yeah.
And so you either have to have density, height, expansion, or reduction of costs. And any combination of the two of the three can help alleviate the condition. But if you take two of those options off the table,
yeah, can't do it.
You're not going to do it. You're not going to do it from a broad standpoint.
That makes a ton of sense. I guess we can kind of begin to taper down the interview. In Lexington in particular, at this point in time and the beginning of 2024, what do you think some things that Lexington actually needs to do? Maybe you can speak even to Kentucky in general. You talked about policy. What are some things that need to happen to help solve the issue that has kind of been created with affordable housing?
So I'll start with the state and then, you know, finish a little bit locally. At the state level, I serve in a volunteer capacity on a board of an advocacy organization. For the last 6 years, we have been pressing the state legislature to create some policies around additional funding for affordable housing that would be statewide. Those can include state tax incentives. Those can include low interest loans. But we have been encouraging the state for 6 years now, take action on this issue. it is only the last two or three years that that message is starting to resonate at the state legislature level, that people are actually hearing, I guess they're actually hearing it in their home districts a lot more. And I am hopeful that this year will be the year. It is a budget year in Frankfort. I'm hopeful that this will be the year that the legislature does take some action to try to create additional resources at the state level that our group and others could access to address housing needs in Lexington and other communities as well. So at the state level, you know, the time is now. Call your legislator. At the Lexington City level, continuing to solidly fund your housing trust fund. That flexible tool, it is well run. There's a good board. There's a good executive director there. That is a good place for local funds to go to be able to continue to incentivize development in Lexington specific to affordable housing. And that housing trust fund, as I mentioned, I think is the first one municipally created in the state of Kentucky that I'm aware of. And it has been the leader for a long time. There's, you know, every city has budget discussions. Every city has competing priorities. I think housing has to stay at the top of Lexington. I hope it is at the top of Lexington's priorities. I think it has to stay there. The challenge that Lexington has today is only going to get worse. The population growth here, I think over the last, I looked this up, I don't remember exactly how far it goes back, but Lexington has outgrown every other municipality in the state of Kentucky, I think over the last 10 years. If you keep going, if Lexington keeps going the way it's going, there's going to become a point where there absolutely will not be anywhere else to go tall without taking out historic structures, without, you know, redefining neighborhoods in a significant way. It's going to be a real pain point, and affordability is going to be further and further out of reach over time. And the reason is because the community is great and people want to live here and people want to be here. And that's a great thing. So let's make the places for them to be.